Sadevaya Dirghayati
Sadevaya Dirghayati
Jata Maitridamati
Jata Maitridamati
Vishpavaryami Vandokam
Vishpavaryami Vandokam
Gantamach Janatamasi
Gantamach Janatamasi.
Word by word translation. Sadevaya
Sadevaya.
By service of the Absolute Truth.
By service of the Absolute Truth.
Adirgaya.
Adirgaya.
For some days.
For some days.
Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Jata.
Jata.
Having attained.
Having attained.
Mahi.
Mahi.
Unto me.
Unto me.
Drida.
Drida.
Firm.
Firm.
Mati.
Mati.
Intelligence.
Gitva,
having given up.
Having given up.
Abhadyam.
Abhadyam.
Deplorable.
Deplorable.
Imam.
Imam.
This.
This.
Lokam.
Lokam.
Material world.
Material world.
Ganta.
Ganta.
Going to.
Going to.
Majjanata.
Majjanata.
My associates.
My associates.
Asi.
Asi.
Become.
Become.
Translation. Referred by His Divine Grace, His Confounder, Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. By service of the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material world. Perfect. Srila Prabhupada. Serving the Absolute Truth means rendering service unto the Absolute Personality of Godhead under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, who is a transparent by a medium between the Lord and the neophyte devotee. The neophyte devotee has no ability to approach the Absolute Personality of Godhead by the strength of his present imperfect material senses. And therefore, under the direction of the spiritual master, he is trained in transcendental service of the Lord. And by such training, even for some days, the neophyte devotee gets intelligence in such transcendental service, which leads him ultimately to get free from perpetual inhabitation in the material worlds and to be promoted to the transcendental world to become one of the liberated associates of the Lord in the kingdom of God. Om Agina Timirandasya Ginanjana Shalagriya serving the Absolute Truth even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence. In Krishna. And then, consequently, he goes on to become Krishna's associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material worlds. So, it is extremely rare to come in contact with the Supreme Absolute Truth in this material world is almost impossible. I heard once this example of just imagine that there is a log of wood floating in the ocean, and there is a hole in that log, and then there is a turtle that is coming from underneath that log in the ocean. The turtle is swimming, and then the turtle decides to put his head out outside of the water, and just at that moment the log passes and the hole is there, and the turtle puts the head in the log. Imagine the possibility of that. It's so impossible. It's like, it's, I don't know, it's practically impossible. So to meet a bona fide spiritual master is very difficult in this material world. Krishna always arranges for us by sending representatives again and again. Because without the representative of the Absolute Truth, Prabhupada is stating here in the first verse, the first sentence, that service unto the Absolute Personality of Godhead under the direction of bona fide spiritual master, who is a transparent via medium between the Lord and the neophyte body. So this is the definition of rendering service to the Absolute Truth. Now, in this material world, we are pretty much imprisoned, just like a fly is being caught into the spider web. Prabhupada gave this example. The fly can never just run out of the spider web because it is sticky. In fact, the example is given, the more the fly is trying to get away from the spider web, the more it becomes entangled on its own. So the only way the fly can be free from that spider web is if some person comes and picks it up and releases it. Someone who is free from the influence of the spider web. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada confirms this by saying that no one can, a person whose hands and legs are tied with ropes very tightly, he cannot free himself. He can roll on the ground, do whatever. Sometimes in the movies they show how some people free themselves by themselves, but it is almost impossible. So you need someone from outside to free you. Perhaps we can say maybe it is possible to free yourself from the ropes, but not from the material energy. It is very small possibility to free yourself from the rope alone without the help of anybody, but to free yourself from the material energy is completely impossible. Therefore, Krishna says, pranitranaya sadhunam vinashya chaduskritam dharma samstato vartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Millennium after millennium I descend into this world to protect the pious, to annihilate those who are impious, and to re-establish the principles of Dharma, spirituality, on the planet. So when Krishna comes, he establishes what is to be done by the human beings, because otherwise we wouldn't know what is to be done. Through our own intelligence, we cannot really understand what is this world. In Bhagavad Gita, it is explained that this world is like an upside down tree, and nobody knows where it begins and where it ends. This is our position in this world. Really, you cannot figure it out by your senses. I remember when I was small, I was very eager to go to school. When the first, you know, primary school, the first day to school, the first time I was going to go to school, I was in ecstasy. I was thinking I'm going to learn something of value there. So the first 3 years I applied myself very diligently to the school. You know, I learned everything and I was an excellent student. But after like some time I realized, no, I'm just there is something missing in whatever their teaching means. It's something missing. I'm not satisfied. This is not what I was looking for, what I was expecting that I'll be learning in this school. So, from that time, personal example I'm using, but I had this drive to understand this world, and I became, as a child, member of the library on my own. I just signed up and I was reading book after book after book. First, of course, more children's books. And then gradually reading more and more, books for adults and so on and so forth. Thinking maybe I'll find something in these books. The more I was reading, the more bewildered and confused I was becoming. And I was thinking, maybe nobody knows anything about this world. I asked my parents, they just say, who knows what is actually real and what isn't real. The teachers don't know, the television don't know, your neighbors don't know, your friends don't know. What is the hope of understanding anything? And at the same time, it's so painful to be in this world. You get sick sometimes. Sometimes people are rude to you, say something horrible, or smack you or whatever, How it is when you're small. It's like the law of the jungle, So much suffering in this material world. So, I couldn't figure it out. And I kept searching and searching, and then I think I was maybe 14, 15 years old. My father gave me the first small religious book. It was like New Testament, yeah. Christian New Testament. So I read it, and I was appreciating the life of Jesus, speaking about God and doing so much outreach, sacrifice. But then I looked around and I thought, is there anybody like him in this world? And I couldn't identify anyone to come any close to what I was reading in this book. So in my experience and in my level of maturity and intelligence, I concluded maybe this is just another book someone wrote, like many people believe these days. It's just mythology, or it's a literary piece. But these days people believe even that some politicians wrote the Bible to control the masses. That's what they believe in these days. It's a modernized illusion, what they're thinking. So, but for some time I gave up, and I was trying to think maybe the goal of life is just to be happy, just to enjoy. Look at all your friends, what are they doing? Just having fun, going out, doing this, doing that. So maybe I can try to see whether this will bring me happiness. So I went with that idea for some time, and I saw this is horrible. It's like a very, I would say, even disgusting type of thinking and behavior in this material world. The way people behave with each other, and it's horrible, it's very painful. So I saw I'm not fitting into that environment at all. So I thought, I don't belong there, where do I belong, what's going on here? So in that way, by my own intelligence, I could not understand the world. I was thinking if there is a God, he must be a cruel God because there is so much suffering in this world. If there was a good God, by definition, he should have been good, and if God is good, why the world is bad? That was my thinking. And if there is no God, I was thinking, why is there so much rigidness in this world? There is laws, like there is certain things you cannot surpass. There is some control. I was seeing it, but I couldn't understand. So one day this was after I was released from the army.
In that time in my country, I'm sure in Australia it was like that also in the past. It was a duty. It's like a national duty. You just go to the army for 1.5 years or 2 years. And then after graduation of matric, before even of you thinking to university, they throw you in the army. 19 years old, something like this, with the machine gun. You're just looking like, what is this? Crazy. This is the material world. And so I kept reading, studying, thinking, writing, speculating, all kind of things. I was reading all kind of different literatures, because at least I had some faith that perhaps in some book I'll find something. So I kept reading Chinese philosophy, Lao Tzu, Confucius, I was reading Hinduism, I was reading this, I was reading that. Nothing would satisfy me. So one day I was almost at the end of my army experience, and one of the soldiers from the same brigade I was in, he invited me to his home on the weekend. He had a birthday, so like a celebration. And I went there, and then I was looking at his books on the shelf, and then I saw, lo and behold, Bhagavad Gita, as it is, in Bulgarian language. I was born in Bulgaria, so I was attracted immediately. So I pulled the book and I started looking at it, and it was very amazing. I was really like drawn to it. But this fellow came, he was a little drunk, intoxicated, because it's his birthday, right? Just leave this book now. This is my birthday, you know, come here, we'll enjoy. So he took the book away from my hands and he just put it on the shelf. And yeah, I felt like I shouldn't endeavor to look at it again because I'll offend him or something like this. So I didn't take a look at the book further. But after I was released from the army service, I was working in my hometown. And one day I saw there was a book caravan with all kind of books, spiritual, quasi-spiritual, metaphysical books. And I was walking one afternoon in the summer, and I was attracted again. Let me just see what is there. So I went close and I saw one amazing small book, very small book. On that small book on the cover there was this blue person sitting on a bedstead. That blue person was dressed in a very royal way, and behind him there was this window, like an arched window, and you can see the sky and some swans were flying, very beautiful clouds and like that. And then just below the bedstead there was a person kneeling down offering namaskar. I didn't know who that was. I did not know who this person down is. I did not know what is this, but I thought this is something I would like to read. So I just, whatever money I had in my pocket, I just gave it. I bought that book. I was attracted to that blue person. I wanted to know who this blue person is and what is this book going to tell me about this blue person. So I took it home and I started studying. And it was so much above my head. Vishnu and the expansion and the incarnation and yoga is this and yoga is that. And I was like, sure, you know, what is this? You know, I can't figure it out. So I left it for a while. But still I was eager. I said, you know, there is something in the book but I cannot understand it now. So I'll just leave it for a while and think about what I've read and see, maybe I will become more ready to read it again. Another day I was walking, same place, and I looked at that same blue caravan. By the way, it's still there. After this was 93 or 1994. It's still there, this caravan, and the man that is selling the books is still there. I meet him every year when I go there, and I thank him every time, giving prasadam. So This time I saw a book. There was this elderly gentleman on the cover, sitting like in a yoga posture, and it was written Prabhupada. And I did not know that there is a connection between the two books. I said, no. Amongst all the hundreds of books there, I said, no, I must buy this book. So I got that book as well. And then I went home and I started reading. Maybe I'll understand if I read this book. And when I started reading, I was like very, very attracted by what I read in the first pages of that book. If you probably have read Your Ever Well Wisher, you know what I'm talking about. Prabhupada, you know, Satsvarup Maharaj explains how Prabhupada took the boat from India and he went across the ocean by himself with hardly any support. And then after so much struggle, he managed with the help of a few people to open this little center in New York. And then Prabhupada will cook, he'll invite people, he'll serve them personally. Of course, he'll give class, he'll teach them about what his message was. Then he'll serve them this vegetarian food, prasadam. And after all those people go, he'll clean the place and he'll wash the pot by himself. So when I read this and I thought, wow, I want to be like this person. So what attracted me in Prabhupada was that selflessness and this sacrificial attitude that he had. He was ready to sacrifice for others. So I kept reading, and after some time I moved to South Africa a couple of years later. Still, the coin did not drop up to that time. I was just reading and I was still thinking, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. My mind was not set. And then when I went to South Africa in 1996, within a few months, I had some amazing experience which made me read these books again. I was at that time, as a young person, pursuing to study at the university and all that. So I was working in a coffee shop trying to save some Lakshmi to pay the university fees. And I was doing some service as a waiter. So some of the people who used to come to that place, they were youngsters, perhaps my age. And they were seemingly very successful in material life. They had everything that I would imagine I would like to have as a young person. They had a brand new BMW, flashy, you know, the latest model at that time. They had flashy clothes. They had flashy girlfriends. Both of them, they were two boys. You know, and they looked like a couple, you know, two couples, very nice people, you know, very respectable. Then the owner of the place told me that these people, they like, you know, multimillionaire families, and they have huge mansions, big swimming pools, you know, servants serving them, and very, very wealthy people. This is the dream of any materialist. I want to be like this, you know, right? So due to the TV propaganda and the MTV and all, whatever we've seen, we are all Hollywood, we're all brainwashed, think this is the dream, this is where you should be aspiring for, this is the goal of life. So I was kind of admiring these people and thinking, maybe one day I'll just now do the university thing and then I'll get into something and I'll probably have the same facility. Because I want to help people, that was my idea. If I have some economic progress, I can help others to get out of the gutter and help them and so on and so forth. I was not thinking only of myself, but I was not realizing also that to be so wealthy, you have to exploit so many other people. You know, we just see the good side. This guy is wealthy, but how he got the money, that's another story. So I was thinking like this. And then what happened is, 1 week, I noticed these people were not coming, the two boys, and the girls were not coming. Sometimes they will come separate, sometimes, you know, they will come together. Nobody was coming. So I asked the owner, where are these people? He said they died in a car accident last week on the highway. The two boys, the girls didn't die. So my pink bubble was burst. And I was thinking, this cannot be the goal of life. You can be so successful materially, and within a few seconds, you're taken away from this body. You're gone. The owner of the restaurant said their car was so squashed, you can't recognize the car. So this was one of the most powerful, like, because I was friends with them, I would chat, you know, like wake-up calls. It shook me up very deeply that this cannot be the goal of life. I should not invest my time and energy into these things. What is the goal of life? So then immediately I remember, those books there. Okay. But I had no books with me because when I was traveling down, I didn't want to carry heavy things, and so I left the books back in Bulgaria. So within maybe a few months or so after that, I moved to Cape Town from Johannesburg, and I went into a second-hand bookstore, which was just like a few minutes walk from where I was staying in Sea Point in South Africa, just like this, close to the sea. And I went to this second-hand store and I looked at the shelf, and lo and behold, there were 6 or 7 or 8 even of these books, the same author, Prabhupada. I bought them all of them one time. And I started reading. And I remember from the first moment I was reading these books, it was like I was in a dark room and suddenly the light illuminated the whole room. So I could see everything in the room. But before it was dark, and as I already described, I was so confused what was supposed to be done and which way to take. Suddenly the Son of Krishna rose in my consciousness and I could see this is actually what this elderly gentleman is saying is most probably the truth, because I can detect that there is a law, there is some governance that is beyond human control. I don't know who is doing it, and I don't think matter, since it is unconscious, can arrange for this governance. Jesus in the Bible, he says that my Father who is in heaven is greater than I, therefore Jesus cannot be God. And Prabhupada was teaching these principles, 4 regulative principles: no intoxication, no meeting, no illicit sex, no gambling. And I thought, if there is a religion, it must include these things, otherwise it's not a religion, because these things are sinful. So if you are doing these things and you are doing religion, then you are a cheater. So I thought if this person did not present these things, he would have been a cheater. So, you know, I wouldn't have followed. But this was there. So I thought this is pure. This is something which I like. Then later on, I was reading, and then Prabhupada started glorifying Jesus and other holy books, the Quran, whatever. He never bashed them. Usually every religion, this is the only way. All the others are rascals, they'll burn in hell, whatever. But Prabhupada was saying this is bona fide authorities because they teach about God. And we should respect them, appreciate them. We have to respect everyone. So I was thinking, wow, if there is a God, and if he's given a religion and knowledge to mankind, although it's different, one who is godly should be respectful to all these different teachers. So I thought this elderly gentleman must be really authentic presenter of what is actually happening. So that was another thing that I liked about Krishna consciousness. And then I started to kind of perceive that Prabhupada is correct, that we are all servants. Prabhupada said, just examine the world and you'll see everyone is serving someone else. Nobody in this world is just a boss and everyone is serving them. Everyone is serving someone else. Even the president of the country, when he goes home, he's serving, or even the position of president is a service in itself. Right? So everyone is serving in some way or other. So So, Prabhupada was emphasizing devotional service, and he was saying, this is our constitutional position. So everything that I read before was that ultimately you become God. I never believed that, but I just thought, this is bogus, you know, I'll become God, you know. So, doesn't make sense. Then the Buddhism was, you know, nirvana emphasis. So I was thinking, you know, I don't want to become zero. Nirvana means nothing, you know. It's almost like being dead man, you know, like this, you know, in a materialistic society, people believe you die in zero. So whether you're going to be Buddhist, I thought, or whether you're going to be materialist, you're still going to reach zero. So why should I endeavor to practice meditation to become zero? I can enjoy my senses and become zero again. Intelligent, huh? But I understood this is not it, because as I try to enjoy my senses, I saw that actually every sense enjoyment has got some suffering attached to it, and I understood this is not pure enjoyment. I want to enjoy purely. This is all nonsense. So I rejected it. I became like a yogi almost. My mother was so depressed, you know, when I was, everyone is going out partying, girlfriends, this, that, you know, you're just reading these books, piles of books on my table. You know, what is going to become of you? She was thinking like that, you know. She was very cross with me. I was telling her, you know, I want to understand who am I and what am I doing here. So she couldn't understand that, of course. She was very disturbed by my behavior. So later on, in South Africa, I was alone from the family and friends, and I had the freedom to choose. Just like most of you have left your families from India, and you have the freedom to choose. Otherwise, in India, you would have been like pressed always. All this Hare Krishna stuff, Hare Rama, you know, they will just laugh at you if you were there and trying to become a devotee. So sometimes it is very good to move away from family to become a devotee, especially for families, his non-devotees. So in South Africa, I decided, as I read Prabhupada's books, I saw such a clear philosophy. Servitude is there. I'm not God. Thank you. Thanks God, I'm not God. Thanks God, I'm not zero. You know, and thanks God that, you know, life is actually eternal, because life can be very nice if you know how to live it. I was thinking like this. And Prabhupada explains that matter and spirit is two different things. Matter cannot produce consciousness. You can mix any chemicals you want, you will not be able to produce consciousness. Life comes from life. Really convinced me. And then I thought, wow, nobody has taught religion or spirituality in that way. Everyone just said, believe in God or whatever, something. Some ideas people will give you in other books. God is there, and if you don't follow him, you'll burn in hell or whatever. You know? So fair enough, yes. It's you know, if you're doing negative things, of course, there must be some suffering, but there was no explanation how to get out of it and why this world is there. So Prabhupada explained, my dear sir, you are responsible for being here, not God. God didn't send you to this world. Sometimes there is that belief that Adam and Eve, they sinned, and then we're their descendants. We happen to be their descendants. So because of their sin, we inherit the sin, and there we go. We're also sinful wretches because of Adam and Eve. But that didn't make sense to me. Why should I inherit someone else's nonsense? So it didn't make sense to me. I thought, no, this is not proper. And then later on I understood that I'm responsible. Srila Prabhupada, again, you know, if you come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, with the transparent via medium between the Lord and the neophyte devotee, then one begins to render service. So what service I was rendering? Shravanam. I was hearing from Prabhupada. I was understanding. So Prabhupada said, my dear sir, if there is anyone to blame, that is you, that you're in this world and you've got this body. And therefore, it is your own responsibility to now give up this material enjoyment, engage in devotional service, because you're eternal servant of God, And if you don't serve God, you'll serve Maya. And Maya means fire, means suffering. So you decide what you want to do, Prabhupada is saying there. He does not force you. If you don't do it, you know, you'll burn for eternity or something like this. Prabhupada says, you will suffer. There is reincarnation. You can give many chances, but if you're intelligent, you come to Krishna. Intelligent. So I could see, wow. Another thing was the fact of reincarnation. Because I thought, if God is there, why would He give us one life alone? And then, if you make a mistake in this one lifetime, then He will burn you into an eternal furnace. You know, it didn't make sense that if God is compassionate, you have to go to eternal hell. So in this way, I could see that people don't understand the scriptures. And when I read later on Bhagavad Gita, then I understood what Jesus is saying in the Bible very clearly. And I started actually teaching some Christian people that I met in South Africa while I was studying. I was also working there, as I said, to pay my studies. And some people came to this coffee shop I was serving, because I was continuing, I just changed the place, city, but I kept the same work. Some people came as my customers in the restaurant. So I made friends with them, and I was a devotee at that time, and I was, vegetarian, and I was not drinking, and, you know, I was following all the regulatory principles. And I was just looking for another work to get out of this coffee shop and whatever. But towards the end of that work, these two people came, and I kind of struck up a relationship with them, made friends, a man and a woman. And it turns out they were Christian, and, you know, so they were kind of questioning what I practice and what I follow, because I told them that, you know, I'm vegetarian and this and that and that. So then we had some discussion. Then the men got little fired up to defeat me through the Bible. So he started putting all kind of arguments. But because he does not understand the Bible, but because I had read Prabhupada's books, I explained to him what is Jesus' teachings. And then this man told me that one whole night, he didn't sleep to read the Bible to find whether I was saying it's true. So he was reading here and there, and the whole night he didn't sleep. And the next day when I met him, he was there with his girlfriend. They were boyfriend and girlfriend, but they also had families. Secretly, they were boyfriend and girlfriend. So they met me, and this guy told me, look, you know, you were right. Everything that you said is there in the Bible. Today, I give up meat eating, smoking, everything. Illicit sex, everything, I give it up. And after some time, they split up, both of them. And even before that, they followed the foray, they started chanting, both of them. Because of Prabhupada's purity. Prabhupada is explaining everything so powerfully that if you're a little sensible, little open-minded person, you'll understand Prabhupada's message, and you'll get out of Maya, get out of this suffering, you know, that you're thinking is enjoyment, all this garbage. So these people became devotees, chanting 16 rounds, started to preach. The guy was a taxi driver. He made on his cart, the taxi cart at the back, the Maha Mantra he put there. He gave to the people, you know, hire my taxi, and at the back is the Maha Mantra. Hundreds and thousands of these cards were distributed. Later on he moved away from the country, and I think he fell down for a while, but I don't know where he is at the moment. But this is something I remember, how through Prabhupada's teachings, these personalities became also purified. So this encounter with Prabhupada's books in my life, with the teachings of a pure spiritual master, pure devotee, was so profound that it transformed me completely. So gradually I was studying at the university, working this, that. I changed my job also, so that I don't serve alcohol anymore in these restaurants or coffee shops. People sometimes take alcohol. And then after some time I decided to move at the temple and rent a room and study and so on and so forth, and continue pursuing spirituality in association of devotees. So I was very, very eager to make it this lifetime, because, and I'm still eager, and I pray that I'll continue to be very, very, very eager, because this is our only qualification, to be eager, to get out of Maya. Then Krishna made the whole other arrangements. So, just by being an association of devotees, you see, by the service of the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material world. So what it is indicated in this verse, that by serving the devotees of the Lord, our intelligence becomes very fixed and we no longer hanker for anything material. And also, after we give up this material deplorable worlds, after we give up the faith in these worlds, like my faith was smashed when these two people died, you know, I had faith in the material world. So when these friends died, my faith was smashed. This is not it. And then now the intelligence has to become more and more fixed in Krishna. Remember, we are like a fly in the spider web. There is no hope on our own, we can figure it out. But by Prabhupada making the sacrifice, leaving from India to come to the West, he gave the opportunity to so many people to understand. And now by serving Srila Prabhupada, through serving his disciples, sincere disciples and grand disciples, we are becoming fixed in intelligence on the Absolute Truth. And in that way, gradually, some faster than others, some slower, this is how it works, we are becoming more and more convinced to give up this deplorable material world. In fact, hellish worlds, I put it this way. It may look so nice to go out in Melbourne now. The ocean is beautiful, the birds are chirping, the waves are making nice, pleasant noise. But inside that ocean, one fish is eating another fish. You know, one entity is eating another entity. Same place. So, only a blind person will not see this thing, and everyone in the material world is blind. Therefore, meeting bona fide spiritual master, pure devotee of the Lord, you are given the eyes to see reality as you never saw before. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Vedantas Meishi Guru Vainamaha. So how grateful we have to become to Srila Prabhupada. How eager we should be to engage in service that will further his mission of reaching out to others, people who are in the same exact position as ourselves, suffering out there in loneliness and bewilderment in this material world. Even if they are surrounded by hundreds of people, they are still lonely. Because this is how Maya operates. Everyone is very, very lonely in their heart. They can never feel satisfied by anyone. So it is our duty as followers of Srila Prabhupada to practice proper sadhana and then to gain strength from that sadhana so that we could approach others, reach out to them and offer them the opportunity to get out of the spider web, to get out of this repeated birth and death, and to not only get out of the repeated birth and death, but also to experience the highest pleasure. This is the positive side. You're helping them to release themselves from prison, the material energy, so that they can taste the highest bliss in the service of the Absolute Truth, which is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. And gradually, one becomes an associate of the Lord in the spiritual world. So it may take many lifetimes sometimes, if we are not so greedy. In the next verse we'll read, in the purport, Prabhupada will say that it accumulates, 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 and then one day you make it. But But if you are very fixed, you can make it in this lifetime. If you're really sick and tired of this world, like they say, you can make it in one lifetime. My Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, has the 12 principles, 12 qualities of the spiritual warrior or the pure devotee. One of those qualities is disgust with the material life. Are we disgusted with the material life? Sometimes we're so attracted still, you know. So until you are attracted, my dear devotees, you have to take birth again and again. Because you are saying to Krishna by that attraction, look Krishna, I'm not interested to come to you, I still have business to do in this world. So although we are serving and chanting Krishna's name, we're still saying, look, you know, give me some space. Let me enjoy some Maya in this world and, you know, in a nice way. So you just give me a little space. But the more we associate with devotees who are intense, the more we serve devotees who are intense to get out of this world, we will make it. I'll tell you one last thing that comes to my mind and I feel I should share with you just to encourage you even more and to encourage myself more. I have to constantly remember this myself to encourage myself. I'm going back to when I was 8 years old. I was sitting in the classroom and then suddenly the door opens and the principal of the school calls me like this. So the class is going on, the teacher is explaining something, mathematics, writing there, whatever. So I'm bewildered. Why is the principal of the school calling me? So I got out of the room. And he pulled me on the side and he said, you know, look, I have some news for you, but, you know, please, you mustn't take them so, like, you mustn't, take it in a such a bad way, these things happen in this world and whatever. I was thinking, what is he going to say to me? So he told me, look, your grandfather passed away. You have to go immediately home, your parents called for you. So when I heard this, 8-year-old boy, I asked the teacher, the principal, I said, what is this passed away? Can you believe it? I did not know what it means to pass away. How many of you knew what is death at 8 years old? I didn't know. How many of you knew what is death? He knew, he had seen probably. So in that way, I also in my childish way, I inquired, what is this death? What is this passed away? I don't understand. What do you mean? He said, look, it means that you'll never see your grandfather anymore. And then this kind of a shock hit me. You know, I'm not going to see my grandfather anymore. And I loved him so much because he used to play with me and take me around. So I was feeling, wow, you know, I'm not going to see him anymore. I was thinking, what is this place? So the thought that came in my mind was, I have come again to the wrong place. Did you hear it? I'll repeat again. I have come again to the wrong place. 8-year-old child thinking like that. I have come again to the wrong place. That immediately indicates reincarnation. Some understanding. I had some understanding that I have come to the wrong place if there is death. That means I have practiced and I failed. And I have come again and I suffered tremendously before I took up the process of bhakti. So I don't want this to happen to any one of you. And I don't want this to happen to me again. Because it's really, really horrible. So my dear devotees, please, kindly become very, very serious to understand Srila Prabhupada's teachings, apply it to your lives, and also share it with others. And in this way, by serving the pure devotee of the Lord and his servants, the servant of the servant, your intelligence will become very fixed. You can give up this material illusions that you can enjoy in this world, that you belong here, that you are this body, and whatever. So all that. and you can become an eternal associate of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any quick comments or questions?
I was going to be giving short class
1 hour. I was thinking I'll just speak for half an hour. But I prayed to Krishna, my dear Lord, please tell me what should I tell the devotees. I don't know what to say to them, you know, because I was not prepared for the class I was at this morning to give it. I was not hoping I'll be giving class. So I hope that we can all benefit from what has been said. Yes, Michael Prabhu? Harina, before that, questions. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
Yesterday you gave an example that if a doctor cures a patient and he does a good thing, and the patient goes and murders someone. So does the doctor also, who did a good thing, get the karma of killing that murderer?
He is asking, when a doctor cures someone and then that person goes and kills someone, does the doctor get some of that karma? In one sense, he is involved in facilitating it, although he did not want to do it. So it won't be like a heavy reaction on him because he was doing his duty, but it's still, my dear sir, a reaction. Whether it's a good or bad, you still have to take birth to receive a good reaction mixed with some bad because of what happens. So there is no purity, there is no happiness in this material world. Therefore we have to give up this illusion that if I do something good, I'll be doing something good, you know, that has value. So in that way we should give up that karmic mentality. We're not supposed to be karmis in ISKCON, you know. We're supposed to be devotee. Devotee means a puppet for Krishna. We are practicing to become a puppet. Sarva dharma parityajya mami kramsaranam raja aham tam sarva papivyo moksha shami vasuchaha. Krishna says abandon everything and surrender. Surrender means your puppet. If Krishna says lift your right hand, you lift your right hand. If Krishna says lift your left hand, you lift. No, Krishna, you're saying lift the right, but I'll lift the left. That is not puppet. Hare Krishna. Yeah, Prabhu. Yeah, Ajay.
According to Vedic perspective, how do we understand the statement we heard original sin?
What's that?
Original sin?
Yeah.
Because it's in Bible, it should be meaningful as well. So how do we understand in Vedic perspective?
No, it's actually people interpret it in that way. It's not in the Bible. It's an interpretation. The Bible is so much misinterpreted that the real teachings have been lost. In later on in the Bible, it states that we have two bodies. There are two types of bodies. Corrupt body, which is raised in corruption, a material body, and then spiritual, celestial body, they say, which is raised in incorruption. So the Bible also indicates kind of that, you know, the material birth is corrupt in some way. But the clear understanding you can really understand from the Vedic teaching, when Prabhupada, you know, informs us that it's our own choice. Prabhupada makes this comment all over his books. He says that it's a misuse of one's free will. So it makes sense, much more than us being forced here to come by Krishna or something like that. Or just accidentally we happen to be a descendant of Adam and Eve. Why me and not someone else, you know? If that was idea, then you know, such a and I'm given one life to make it or break it. I don't want to be in such a world, you know, where I'll be forced to make it. You understand what I'm saying? So that is not love. That is completely fallacy, you know. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because it's not based on the principle of love. It's based on force. You have to make it. One life I'm giving you, otherwise eternal hell. So you happen to be here by accident, and it doesn't make sense. And if you read in the Bible, it's also an indication that, you know, basically we are the soul, not the body, which immediately will raise the question, where is the soul coming from then? You know, like in later, at the end of the New Testament, it says, faith without works is dead and body without spirit is dead. So they make the distinction. So if I'm a spirit, if I'm a soul, where do I come from? You know, why did I choose, or who forced me to come? If God forced me, then, you know, I don't like Him, because why does He have to force me to come here to surrender to Him so that I don't go to hell? That doesn't make sense. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes or not? It's based on force, control and manipulation. And that is a misinterpretation. So some of the things in the Bible, Srila Prabhupada says, it's like a abridged version of the Vedas. So some of the things are not explained in great detail. And that's why it may be misinterpreted. So Prabhupada, even if you read Srimad Bhagavatam without purpose, you can get confused of Bhagavad Gita. That's why Prabhupada wrote the purpose, so that we don't get speculative. That's why meeting a bona fide spiritual master is crucial to get out of the spider web. That important and that rare it is, that opportunity. As the turtle coming through the log hole in the ocean. It's very rare, so take this advantage. Does it make sense? I hope so. Any other comments or questions? Yes? Amazing. I for first time, you know, when I sat in his class and when I heard him how he speaks, within few moments, perhaps few minutes, I could recognize this is my guru. It was just there in my heart. And I had seen before a few other spiritual masters, and I liked them, respected them, and I spoken to them, and I heard lectures. They're all very nice. They're trying to serve Prabhupada, but nobody stole my heart. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was a thief. He stole my heart. Heart thief. You know. And basically, he was the thief who stole my heart. So there is other thieves serving Prabhupada who are stealing others' hearts, but the mission is the same. So Prabhupada was also a thief, just like Krishna. Krishna steals butter, Prabhupada steals heart. So you will actually, when you meet your spiritual master, you recognize the voice somehow or other. It's just like the shepherd calling his sheep, you know, that kind of feeling. I was sitting in the class, and he had such a hypnotic influence on me that when he spoke, I didn't even look at him. I just kept writing down, just like Ganesh wrote when Vyasadeva spoke. He just was giving his lecture, and I was with a pen. That time there was no computers, no recorders. There was this little cassette player, and then when the cassette curdled, then it's all finished, you know. That these were the years, you know, you probably, some of you don't even remember these things. But yeah, I just kept writing, like Ganesh hearing from Vyasadeva, and I was so enraptured by what he was saying. And I just felt this is actually my spiritual master, because I spotted two qualities in him: truthfulness and compassion. Out of him was like streaming like rivers of compassion. Like waves of compassion. You can just feel it in his voice, how he loves everyone that he speaks with. And then we will finish just now. And then I could feel also his truthfulness. He was like Devamrita Maharaj says, he would always catch the bull for the horns. He will never just tiptoe around or hit around the bush. Sometimes people will ask him something like really, really kind of a difficult question concerning the social application of ISKCON's principles and the difficulties that ISKCON was going through at that time. Someone would just throw a question at him that is very difficult, and he'll just take the bull for the horns, truthful, and just say, well, this is where we're failing, and this and that and that, and this is what needs to be done, and whatever. Okay, we have to finish. Yes, Prabhu. Last question, right?
The translation says that in a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence.
Yes.
Is Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Also, we have heard, we have seen, and also from your previous pastimes that you said that some of the saints have taken back from Krishna consciousness for and all. So, if this world is such a dangerous place, and why would they retreat back to fall out of Krishna consciousness? What is the fact?
They wanted to burst the bubble. It's a demigod mentality. I'm serving Krishna, but I want to enjoy. So, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told me that one of the senior devotees in the 90s fell. Madhu, bumblebee. Krishna, Krishna. So, one of the senior devotees actually had difficulty and he fell. Very, very big guru in ISKCON in the 90s. So the temple president of Durban, Swarup Damodar Prabhu, asked Gurudev, we were in the car going to the dentist, Gurudev was going to the dentist, and he asked him, why did this person fall? He was so powerful. And he said, it was due to demigod mentality. Demigods are very, very powerful. They are devotees of the Lord, but they are not pure sadhus. So, pure sadhu is someone who always takes shelter of Krishna completely. He does not hanker for any material enjoyment. And Krishna protects such a sadhu. So if there is other Vaishnava, senior Vaishnavas who are not falling, that means they are pure. Because they are taking shelter of Krishna. They are situated Krishna's lotus feet. They don't give up. So if you have demigod mentality, I'll serve Krishna but I want to enjoy a little bit. You'll make offenses. Those offenses will diminish your taste for seva, for service. And then the material desires will start to creep in. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj said it goes like this. Vaishnava Parat, Guru Parat, Founder Acharya Parat, Krishna Parat, and you're finished. That's how it goes. You start offending Vaishnavas because you think you're too powerful, demigod mentality. Indra. What did Indra do? He tried to kill Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan. Demigod mentality. He's a servant, but he's deluded. He's thinking I'm too powerful. Offend Vaishnavas. From Vaishnavas, you offend your guru, Founder Acharya. From Founder Acharya, you offend Krishna. Maybe Krishna is just mythology, whatever. Let me just enjoy my senses. Finished. So offense is the greatest danger. Therefore, Trinada Pisumichana, just like a blade of grass. The Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to say, the more senior you become, the more humble you have to become. In the material world, the more senior you become, the more elevated, the more proud one becomes. And one becomes confused by the pride. One time Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was given a garland and he went to a radio show and the lady tried to put him on the spot. She said, why do you have a garland? And I was a very new devotee. I was thinking, my Guru Maharaj will say now because I'm a guru and the disciple have to give a garland to the guru and, you know, it's a culture. And I was thinking that's what he's going to say. You know what his answer was? I have a garland so that I can always remind myself that I have to keep praying to Krishna. So this is here to remind us that we are completely dependent on Krishna. It's not here for any other purpose. and the radio presenter and myself, we were both like, what is this, you know? I mean, she was like appreciating that he didn't puff himself up or whatever in the eyes of the people, and I was appreciating that he didn't give a standard answer according to the book. The book is, well, the guru must be given a garland, he should be treated as representative of God, etc. He didn't say these kind of things. He said, this is here to remind me that I have to always pray. That's all. So, these kind of individuals, they remain. And not only remain, they become associates of the Lord. I think we should end here. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Nitai Gaur Premanande.
Thank you.